Welcome back, everyone. This is the Bless You Boys Podcast Weekend Edition. I'm your host, Brandon Day. If you didn't catch our first episode last weekend, last Sunday, this is a new project I'm going to try to take on and keep up with this year, where I will do kind of a weekly wrap. Probably these episodes will come out on Saturdays or Sundays. Basically, what I wanted to do is just kind of do a shorter episode than the normal Bless You Boys podcast, which you guys are hopefully familiar with, which I host along with my co-host, Ashley McClemon. Ashley is a very busy lady. She has a lot of enterprises and projects and duties and jobs to undertake. And so it's pretty hard to get her for more than one night a week. And what we like to do on the main podcast is kind of talk about everything and let ourselves just kind of go off onto whatever tangents we want. We talk a lot about the league in general, some of the more big picture stories from a week in baseball. So what I wanted to do here is kind of do a little bit more of the housekeeping and really kind of like hit on the Tigers, and their past week. Some of the key performances, what we're seeing up there, some individual notes we've heard from other sources, and kind of some of the best takes we've had around the site, and kind of bring that to you in a little bit more condensed format, so that when we do the main show on Tuesday nights and release that on Wednesday, we're a little more free to just kind of free form it. The format of the main podcast is basically just Ashley and I having a weekly phone call where we just talk about anything that strikes our fancy in terms of Tigers baseball or baseball in general, or possibly wandering off into all other sorts of historical, scientific, and whatever other tangents that we get into. So, what I'm going to do in this episode basically is just run down the New York Yankees series. The second segment, we're going to talk about opening day and talk about Spencer Turnbull, some of the issues with the offense and why you probably shouldn't be terribly worried about that at this point. And then I'll wrap it up with a couple notes on opening days from around the minor leagues. I got done watching Matt Manning's first outing of the season for the Erie Seawolves earlier. Isaac Paredes hit a huge jack to left field in that game. Just looked fantastic, as he did all last year. That was fun. So we'll get into that at the end and probably wrap it up on that note. So, pretty darn good week for the Tigers. We don't have a lot of expectations this year that don't revolve around individual players and their development. Basically, we just want the team to play some fun baseball. And, something we've kind of observed over the past, this is my fifth year covering the team. But our managing editor, Rob Rojacki, has pointed this out over and over again, which is just that the Tigers are kind of a fast starting team. It doesn't seem to matter, what the roster is. You guys will remember some of the quick starts that, some of the Brad Ausmus led Tigers teams got out to. Obviously those things, tended to flounder in May and June, more often than not. But overall, the Tigers just seem to have a knack for coming out of Lakeland, with a little bit of, fire under them. And taking it to some teams that maybe no one expects them to in the early going, and they've definitely done that so far. To be out to a 5-3 record, having gone through the Toronto Blue Jays and the New York Yankees both on the road, is pretty darn good. In the last episode, I talked about the Blue Jays series, so we'll leave it there. But obviously, the starting pitching was the story of that series. The Tigers got four really good turns from their starters, and that has continued on this week. The Tigers did drop Game 1 to the Yankees by a score of 3-1. That game took place on Monday. Tyson Ross was the starter. Tyson Ross didn't look terribly good. He did walk four batters. I believe in that game he struck out four as well. Allowed three runs, two of them earned. And wasn't bad. It's obviously not the Yankee lineup that you would expect to face. That's a team that's pretty much, positionally just racked with injuries right now. They've got Giancarlo Stanton out, they've got Aaron Hicks out, they've got Miguel Andujar out, and even some of the depth that they had brought in to kind of back them up, Troy Tulowitzki is hurt as well. So they don't even kind of have the backup. It's kind of like Brett Gardner, Gary Sanchez, and Aaron Judge, and, a bunch of guys you're not that familiar with. Luke Voit and Andrew Bird. Is it Andrew Bird? No, that's the singer who I like. Greg Bird. Those two guys playing first base, are decent young bats, but not guys that you necessarily fear. Tyson Ross in general, I've always really liked Tyson Ross's slider. I was pretty happy that they picked him up. I kind of had him on the list with like Matt Shoemaker and Garrett Richards, of guys I was really interested in seeing the Tigers pick up at a low cost, knowing that they weren't going to spend a lot of money this offseason. Tyson Ross was all right. The slider still looks pretty good. He was still getting swings and misses. But overall, his command wasn't terribly good. The fastball is more 92, 93 now than kind of in his heyday when he was a little bit closer to sitting 95 with regularity. He was kind of mixing in a cutter on the inside of the plate to right-handers that was pretty interesting. He showed a willingness to kind of go inside and jam those guys. And I think that's going to be important because when he was living on the outside of the plate with the slider and the fastball, he was getting hit. There were pretty good swings against him, even from some guys that don't really have that much business, hitting well in the major leagues at this point in their careers. There's some young guys over on the Yankees who look like they were seeing the ball well against him. So, it was the first start. All these things are small samples. It's in the early going. A pitcher can, have a terrible outing and then come back and have a great outing. And their numbers will turn from night and day that quickly. So you can't take too much out of all these things. We'll just see what Tyson Ross has going forward. Obviously, the Tigers' offense didn't do much in that game and didn't do really much of anything in that whole series. In game one, Domingo German, who's a nice young pitching prospect, but was really, kind of just effectively wild. He's walking guys left and right, but really only gave up the one hit. So they were a little bit anxious there, perhaps, from some of the lesser bats in the Tigers' order, while Miguel Cabrera and Nick Castellanos have both shown kind of unique amounts of patience in the early going. I haven't seen the two of them take as many kind of fastballs right down the middle for strikes as they did, or they have really in the early going. So that'll be something to watch. They just seem to be a little bit perhaps overly patient. They were getting a lot of fastballs first pitch and taking them, which isn't characteristic of a Lloyd McClendon as your hitting coach style team, nor reminiscent, really of most of the Tiger teams we've seen over the last 10 years. So we'll see if that, if that's a strategy. Maybe they're trying to be patient. Miguel Cabrera probably just isn't seeing the ball all that well. He's still, trying to get back in the groove after missing over, about 4 months last year. Nick Castellanos is hitting the ball fine, but both of the two of them have kind of been drawing their walks, and teams have been staying away from them, whether by design or by accident. We'll just have to see going forward. But the Tigers came out in game two, and Jordan Zimmermann went out and pitched another absolute gem for us. Just painting the quarters, had his slider going, is using the slider almost as much as his fastball now, which is a really smart move because the fastball, while he can locate it really well and kind of keep the swings a little bit weak against it, it's still not a super lively fastball, and he's sitting 90 to 92 miles an hour. So, at times he's still, you would have to expect he's still going to get hit hard, but by mixing in that slider and kind of being able to bend it sort of into more of a cutter shape, and then kind of the real wipeout slider that he'll get a lot of swings and misses with, and then mixing in his curveball as well, which I think has been more of a weapon than I expected over the past year for him, at least when he's been healthy. He's looked really good. And, I don't want to, kind of beat a dead horse now that James McCann is gone, but I do feel like just watching, these first 8 games that, you're seeing better actions from the catching behind the plate. Grayson Greiner is a lot better receiver than James McCann really ever was. John Hicks isn't great, but he's acceptable in that, in that department. And so, when you have a pitcher with the control that Jordan Zimmermann has, they can really set people up and make them look bad, and they did so on Tuesday. At the plate, we saw more of the same. The Tigers struck out, I think, was it 12 times in that? Yeah, 12 times in that game. But they did rack up 11 hits, mostly against Masahiro Tanaka. So that was kind of the game where we started to see the offense flash a little bit more potency there. John Hicks doubled. Jamer Candelario had a pair of doubles. Jamer Candelario has been a little up and down so far, but he's had a couple really big games. Of course, had a 5-hit game in Toronto. And it was Dustin Peterson, who against Aroldis Chapman came through with a double off the left field wall to score the eventual game winner. And that was really cool. Dustin Peterson is a young guy. That was his first major league hit, I believe, and to do that against Aroldis Chapman, you know, perhaps the most terrifying, you know, closer since Mariano Rivera's prime, was pretty impressive and just a really cool moment. And you could see he was, he was a little bit overwhelmed and just having the time of his life after that one. That was just that was a cool win. And going into that series, you know, most of us, you know, just kind of wanted us to take one from the Yankees and bring it back home, you know, 3-4. That would have been acceptable. And he got it done there with that hit. The bullpen locked things down. The bullpen's been really good so far as well. This is the time of the year where pitchers do tend to be ahead of the hitters. It's cold out. You know, guys are standing around while the pitchers are moving or in the dugout. So, you know, take all these things with a grain of salt, as we said earlier. But, you know, Joe Jimenez blanked him in that game. Shane Green picked up his third save already in that game on Tuesday. The bullpen didn't allow any hits over 2 1/3 innings. So that was just a beaut right there. And then they came out the next day and they did it again. And this time it was Gordon Beckham getting the game-winning home run, which, you know, for a lot of us who just don't really see much of a point to having Gordon Beckham on the roster when you could hopefully, you know, pick up someone a little bit younger who actually still has some upside remaining. It was, you know, it's nothing personal against Gordon Beckham, so it was very cool to see him come through and contribute in a big way to a victory there. But the real story of that game was Matt Boyd, who just went nuts. Struck out 13 Yankees, looked damn near unhittable in that game. You know, he gave up some singles. You know, he gave up one earned run. He did walk three. You do have to factor in, again, that the Yankees lineup isn't at full power by any means. The early innings of that game, you know, were kind of sun-streaked between the pitching mound and home plate. And so, you know, that can mess with hitters. The ball's going from dark to light and back again as it approaches the plate. That makes it even tougher, especially when you have a guy like Boyd who is really kind of throwing from a wide arm angle. You know, there were a lot of comparisons on Twitter with people, you know, who obviously don't pay a lot of attention to Matt Boyd and are taking notice now, because, of, you know, he's that was 23 strikeouts in his first two starts, which for the moment was the major league lead. Jacob DeGrom did come out that same night and eclipse him in that score, but still leads the American League with 23 strikeouts. And, you know, Matt Boyd's slider just looks incredible. Prior to the 2018 season, Boyd was training at Driveline Baseball out in Washington, which he does every offseason, but he really, really committed to trying to develop a new slider and wasn't happy with the previous version. And the new one he's throwing is almost more of like a slurve. You know, it's 80, 81 miles per hour, whereas his old slider was more like 85, 86. And this thing just has a ton of horizontal movement and depth on it now. He was back-footing right-handed hitters all day, and they were just absolutely coming nowhere close to the baseball, and it was impressive. And the other thing, you know, we saw that last year. You know, Boyd, you know, really, really leaned into the slider. I think he threw 20% more sliders out of his total pitch mix in 2018 than he had in 2017. I wrote about this earlier in the week. There's an article up on the site about it and Matt Boyd's, you know, kind of potential breakout status here. But the thing that he did so far in these first two starts that he didn't do last year is that he's basically ditched the sinker or the two-seamer, whichever way you want to characterize it. It never really had a ton of sink to it, but he did get more ground balls and had a very high fly ball percentage last year, which led a lot of us to kind of worry. You know, he had his career best year last year, but he was vulnerable to the long ball, especially outside of Comerica Park. And that is still something you're going to have to watch for this year, but he's basically just sort of leaning into it. He is throwing basically all four-seamers at this point. He's living up in the zone from 90 to 93 miles per hour. And because he's doing that, all three of his main pitches are coming out at the exact same angle when they leave his hand. And so far, they've been indistinguishable to hitters. And you've got a curveball that's basically 70 miles per hour with kind of huge horizontal sweep to it in depth. You've got the new slider that's at about 80 miles per hour with similar depth and horizontal movement, really sweeping it all the way across the plate, looking like Andrew Miller or a Chris Sale kind of style slider. And then he's pumping the fastball at the top of the zone, and guys can't tell them apart. And when you have your three main offerings separated by 10 miles per hour from each other, that generates a lot of whiffs. When you're you know, when your velocity bands are closer together, it's more likely that guys can adjust after they start to swing and still get a piece. When your pitches are 10 miles per hour apart, it's really hard to do that. And because they're all looking the same out of his hand, it's, you know, it's just playing hell on hitters right now. And we'll have to see how it goes. You know, Matt Boyd maybe could be this year's Patrick Corbin, a guy who just finally, like, fully refined his slider, you know, last season and just leaned heavily into it and was just striking people out left and right like he'd never had before. Matt Boyd kind of did that last year, but with the emphasis on the four-seamer up and a little bit more horizontal movement so far this year, it seems like he's even kind of getting around and even on top of the ball a little bit, almost to a spin axis that's somewhere right between a slider and a curveball. He's getting just absolutely fantastic movement on that pitch, and he was carving people up. So that's going to be fun to watch. You still have to kind of see how things go, because this is all about consistency, and we've seen Matt Boyd rip off really nice stretches basically each of the last 3 years, where he had a month or two where he was just dominating everybody and then would suddenly blow up for a bunch of starts. And that could still happen this year. But when you're getting more swings and misses, you're getting more whiffs overall. The chances for that damage coming and the chances of that damage when it does come being when you have runners on base is all kind of diminished. And that's really kind of what he needed to do, is find a way to punch out a few more guys while keeping the walks down. And so far, he's right on course to do that. So that's very exciting stuff. Matt Boyd's looking very good. He was obviously kind of just laughing to himself at some of the swings hitters were taking against him on Tuesday, and the whole thing was just absolutely a blast to watch. He was just a monster that day, and all that throughout that start, you could see people on Twitter, like a lot of national writers, a lot of the big like fantasy baseball writers. Everybody was just kind of like going nuts, and the chatter was all in Matt Boyd's direction. Which was cool to see. It's really, really been neat to see him kind of come into his own. I think Matt Boyd is 28 now, right in his prime, you know, pitching his best ball and just dominating out there. And it was awesome. So overall, to that point, you know, the Tigers pitching had just looked incredible. It was the offense that, you know, was kind of scaring some people. But, you know, you went through New York, you went through Toronto. Tigers came out of that 4-3. They had an off day before. Well, no, they didn't have an off day. The home opener was on Thursday, and you know, when you come out of the Bronx with a series win, you always feel good. You know, it's nice that the Tigers caught the Yankees when they did, and they took advantage of it. And you know, beyond that, you know, having Gordon Beckham and Dustin Peterson come up with the big hits is just a part of why, you know, baseball is just crazy and unpredictable and also so great. You know, those two guys may never have a better moment than that in their careers. You know, Gordon Beckham, basically winding down, doesn't really have a place in the majors really at this point. Dustin Peterson is a guy who was a decent prospect but is now 26 and kind of getting to that point. Nico Goodrum was at, say, last year, where it was like, hey, you know, it's time for you to figure out a way to be effective at the major league level so that a team can get something out of you, or you're kind of starting to look like a career minor leaguer. So you know, we'll see what Peterson can do. I'm happy to have him on the club. At least he's young and young enough to still have some potential. And, you know, he's played decent in the corner outfield. I definitely don't see him as a center fielder, but nobody really sees Mikey Matuk as a center fielder. And Nico Goodrum hasn't looked much like a center fielder yet either, although, you know, he's only had a couple shots at it. So I'm not really going to say too much about Nico Goodrum, center fielder, except that I would like to see them keep sending him up because he has the speed to play the position. And, you know, Ron Gardenhire has talked about, you know, how at some point they're going to need to find Nico Goodrum a positional home to make sure he can get enough at-bats because, you know, the plate appearances have been really, really good so far. Nico seems to be seeing the ball great. He's drawn a ton of walks, and even though the numbers aren't, you know, incredible, apart from his 220 WRC+, which is fantastic, he's drawn a lot of walks, and when he is swinging, he's making contact, and it's been hard contact, so that's been super cool. So that was the first two series, and we're going to take just a momentary break, and then we will talk about opening day and then get into the offense a little bit and wrap things up with a quick look around the minor leagues. So stay tuned for just a moment. All right, we're back, and let's get into opening day. Because, the Tigers right now are a difficult franchise to be super excited about, obviously. And yet, opening day is just such a huge tradition in Detroit, and God bless you, Tigers fans. It looked like, the fans came out in full force. Everybody had a blast. We had Craig Monroe running around in his orange suit, having a great time and kind of being the Don Cherry ambassador to the fan base from the broadcast team. Whatever you feel about Craig Monroe, he's a fun guy and a fun presence around the club, and interacts really well with the fans. Is pretty beloved by a lot of people, and I really like Craig Monroe. I wouldn't want him as my regular color guy or anything like that. Although Jack Morris might make me reconsider that possibility. But yeah, opening day, just a blast in Detroit. Our boys with Tigers SRD had Keenan Carter. Who writes for us at Bless Your Boys and also does the Minor League Tracker podcast, and has his own site as well on the side that you should check out. Does a ton of good minor league coverage for us. He was there. Those three guys did a podcast together with Paul Wesner from Tigstown over at 24/7 Sports. That was really good and is worth hunting down on the internet if you are interested in hearing some really good perspectives on the Tigers farm system. So they had that going on opening day. I think just about everyone on the site, either took the day off work or was trying to watch from work, which was the situation I found myself in due to some irritating stuff that had to be dealt with at work that wouldn't let me escape. So I didn't end up getting the day off, but I did watch the whole game afterward, and it was another fun one. Spencer Turnbull came out in his second start of the season and looked real good once again. He scattered a few runs, but the Royals never really mounted any kind of a major rally against him. He allowed like a run in the first, one in the third, one in the fifth. And maybe the most impressive thing about, his first two starts has been that when, Spencer Turnbull throughout his time in the minor leagues, was a guy that the Tigers drafted in the second round in 2014. Everybody's always liked his fastball. And the secondary pitches have kind of slowly come along, but the first couple years in the organization, he was really hampered by a lot of shoulder injuries and couldn't really stay on the mound consistently. And when you're having issues like that, it's just really hard to make any strides in your development. It's hard to improve your command, hard to refine any of your breaking balls or your changeup. So, he kind of fell down the rankings, and I'm sure a lot of people are looking at a lot of Tigers, farm system rankings. And wondering why, Spencer Turnbull on a lot of them is, probably ranked, 14th, 15th. I think we had him somewhere in the early teens, like 11th or 12th. I'd have to look it up. But it's basically because he's 26 years old and, has been, pretty injury prone since the Tigers picked him up. But the past two seasons, he's finally gotten those issues under control. I'd be real interested in hearing if he changed anything in his conditioning. Or in his mechanics to kind of take some of the stress off of his shoulder. And we're just gonna have to see how durable he is this year. And that might be kind of a cloud that hangs over him, for another couple years. But by the same token, that cloud hangs over just about every starting pitcher or any pitcher in general in baseball. So you can't worry too much about those kind of things. And the thing, to go back to my initial point before I went off on this wild tangent, throughout Spencer Turnbull's entire career, is that he's had a tendency to start out strong in his outings and then start to lose command, struggle when he gets into the stretch or when he gets into a tight spot. And some of that was perhaps physical in the early going, but a lot of that is just sort of the mental struggles that any young starter has to kind of push himself through, to kind of take your lumps, battle out of jams, and then come back strong with shutdown innings. And Spencer Turnbull's done that in both of his two outings. The strikeouts have been there. Really, the curveball in particular has looked really good. He's thrown quite a few good sliders. Both of those two pitches have been relatively inconsistent in his career, although at his best, he has a pretty good one of both. And he punched out 10 Royals without too much difficulty. I mean, those guys were swinging at air quite a bit. He gave up 6 hits. 2 earned runs. There was, a third run that was the result of Nico Goodrum kind of having a ball like just kind of skip past him in the outfield, in center field, and go all the way to the wall. That was Whit Merrifield, and Goodrum did pretty well to hustle back there and get it back in before Whit Merrifield cruised around for an inside the Parker because that dude is fast and steals tons of bases. And is a really good player on a Royals team that doesn't really have a whole lot to offer other than him, Adalberto Mondesi. And, perhaps, we'll see if maybe Jorge Soler eventually kind of breaks things out a little bit. As far as the Tigers' offense in that game, it was another game where they did rack up quite a few hits. We had Nico Goodrum in particular, just kind of raking, hit two doubles in that game, racked up three RBI. Miggy roped I think it was a single to the wall in right center, just a bullet out there to score a run. He walked twice. Nick Castellanos walked twice. Josh Harrison walked twice. That was seven walks between, your first four hitters. And Jacob Junis, has kind of had the Tigers' number last year, especially. And it wasn't terribly wild, but the Tigers have shown pretty good patience and did a nice job getting on base. And a lot of times when there were runners in scoring position, you could kind of tell they were nibbling on the KC side and trying not to get into too much trouble. So, who else had a good hit? Like Kristen Stewart had an RBI double in that game. That was nice to see. Kind of went down in a tough count and took a pitch below the zone and drilled it down the right field line. He's had some struggles early on, but continues to hit the ball hard and draw walks. You're going to see that a lot from him. It's likely he's going to have some struggles as a rookie, but the power is there, and the pitch recognition isn't necessarily great, but the zone recognition is really, really pretty good, which is one of the reasons we've been pretty confident in Kristen Stewart that he would at least be, a pretty productive hitter this year. We did have Blaine Hardy come out and give up a run in that game, but otherwise he was solid, and Shane Green came out in that game for the third day in a row and picked up a save. The slider looked really good from him. His fastball command has been pretty darn good. The velocity has been down, which is a little concerning. I'm always a little bit concerned about Shane Green because he's had so many arm injuries. This is a guy who had Tommy John surgery way back when he was at junior college, when he was 19. You just never know if he got the best, care and rehab in that situation. And obviously he's had to have the ulnar nerve transposition surgery. I think he had bone chips cleared up at one point, and he still dealt with the ulnar neuritis, which is the tingling and numbness in his fingers. And that seems to especially affect him when it's cold out. So once again, I really did not love Ron Gardenhire using Shane Green 3 days in a row. Other people disagreed. I think Robert Jackie, was pretty well fine with it. A couple other people on the site weren't particularly bothered. For me, I would like to see them take a little better care of Shane Green this year in the hope of dealing him in July and not kind of having this thing where he, pitches well for 2 months and then fades out over the summer months, right when you're looking to deal him, which is what happened last year. You can't necessarily blame that on how he was used. Ron Gardenhire leaned on Shane Green pretty heavily in the early going last year as well. Even had him close out, back to back, double a double header where he pitched in both games. That's pretty heavy usage. Shane Green is an experienced guy. He's a tough guy. He's got the right mentality to be a closer, but he's not, an absolutely dominant arm out there. He's a guy who has a nice cutter, pretty nice fastball, but neither is terribly overpowering. But when he does have the slider going, it's a nasty, like Corey Kluber looking frisbee up there that is pretty hard to hit. And he's looked pretty good in the early going. I would just like them to take it a little bit easier on him rather than, take the chance of damaging him as a potential trade piece, just to squeeze out an extra win in April. That's just my thought on it. They know their guys better than I do. Obviously, they know what they're doing better than I do. They're in the room with Shane, and if he looks all right to them and they're comfortable with it, go with what they say. But I would still like to see them just be a little bit more judicious in how they deploy him. I believe Shane Green now leads the major leagues with five saves. If you didn't pick him up in a fantasy league, you probably made a big mistake there because if you still have saves in your fantasy league, there aren't a whole lot of guys who you can depend on. But yeah, so generally, just all in all, a really good day. Turnbull, he was getting whiffs on the curveball. He's getting whiffs on the slider. He's mixing his cutter in there. And, I think people are kind of wondering, like, is Spencer Turnbull just way better than people thought that he was? I saw Eric Langenhagen in his chat, I think it was today or yesterday, who's one of the lead prospect writers along with Kylie McDaniel for Fangraphs, both of whom I really respect and love the work of. He was still kind of, someone asked him about Turnbull today in his chat, and he was still like, yeah, still just kind of a fifth starter. And that's not an unreasonable perspective to hold at this point. We still need to see a lot more. Because of some of the durability issues, most of us have kind of pegged Spencer Turnbull as hopefully like a good late innings reliever, when you could kind of, turn him loose to ramp his fastball up to 97, 98, maybe just focus on one breaking ball and his changeup and not be throwing sort of like six pitches, which is basically what he's got going right now. The issue I think that remains for Spencer Turnbull is just fastball command, and seeing if he can kind of refine that a little bit. He's still, his control is better. He throws a lot more strikes than he did at various points in his minor league career, but he's still not exactly like painting the edges, spotting everything where he wants it. And he's got such a kind of diverse mix of fastballs that that may just be asking too much, and it may perhaps at some point he's going to have to just decide, to kind of live with the sinker or to live with the four seamer, maybe with the cutter as an addition. It's just hard to know. It helps if you don't have great control to have three fastball variants because it makes it a lot harder for hitters to barrel you up. Should help him keep the ball in the park and not get hit too hard off the fastball. But it also may be, one of those things where it also makes it harder for him to really refine his command and sequencing, against hitters because he's throwing a cutter and then he's throwing a rising four-seamer with really good, backspin on it, and then he's taking all the spin off of it with a sinker that actually drops, pretty darn well and is a very effective pitch as well and really kind of his bread and butter. So he's throwing a lot of stuff up there. And so far it's been working, and we'll just kind of have to see if maybe, paring that down at some point is necessary or if he can, kind of wing these three varieties of fastball up there, 93 to 95, and just be really hard to square up and then follow up with the curveball and the slider and just dominate people. We've seen that in the early going, and we'll have to kind of keep an eye on it to see how it goes. I wouldn't get too excited, but it really does look like Spencer Turnbull has obvious, well, we knew he had the stuff to pitch in the major leagues, but it looks like he's ready to be a consistently useful major leaguer. And the question now is just whether or not he can come a little bit further as a starter and move himself into being, like maybe a mid-rotation guy. I don't think that's out of the question. But I also still don't think it's out of the question that he has some rocky stretches and, possibly isn't terribly durable. And, in those cases, it may still be a return to the bullpen is the best thing to do with them. And you might actually get yourself a really dominant reliever out of him. And the way really, dominant relievers are valued these days, that may be in the long run, the best course of action for them. But overall, just a super fun opening day. Great for the fans to come out and get a win out there and have a good time. And then, because they always have the day after opening day off, just to allow for them to move opening day in case of, a weather issue. There was no baseball today, which is just kind of weird all of a sudden to have no baseball on a Friday for the Tigers. But in general, you couldn't ask for any more than for the Tigers to go 5-3, to come home and play some AL Central teams that aren't particularly good. And what we've seen so far is that the Cleveland Indians are really struggling. There is really not much to offer on that team in terms of offense. Right now the Tigers' offense actually looks better, to me than the Indians' offense does, which is really weird to say. And I assume won't last. But they're gonna have to get Francisco Lindor healthy and get him back on the field. Jose Ramirez has really kind of struggled, going back to the last month or two of last season. And but beyond those two guys, you've got Carlos Santana, and then you've got like Leonis Martin in center field. Maybe Bradley Zimmer takes a little step forward, but they really did nothing to augment their offense in the offseason. It's just baffling that the whole Cleveland fan base and the fact that they don't come out for a team that's that good and has young star talent, like Lindor and Ramirez, and has, maybe the best rotation still in the game, even though the bullpen isn't what it used to be. It's just maddening. It's just weird. You really, I have no love for Cleveland, but I would really, really like to see those guys come out and support their team, and it's just baffling that they don't, You don't deserve nice things, Cleveland. All your starters should belong to us. So that'll wrap it for opening day. Let's talk about the offense a little bit. In general, the offense has looked terrible. They've struck out a ton so far. I don't think anybody has been unaware of that fact. But of course, we've also seen the Tigers pitchers striking out tons of opposing batters. And again, some of that is just, you know, kind of the early season stuff where, you know, the pitchers are a little bit ahead of the hitters. So, you know, I wouldn't make too much out of the strikeout rate the Tigers have posted so far. They're not going to hit like this all year. I'm pretty convinced this is a better offense than you guys, you know, had to watch last year. Some of that does depend on how long, you know, and how much Miguel Cabrera can stay healthy and be on the field. But even beyond that, you know, the Tigers do have some interesting young weapons offensively now. And while, you know, half of the lineup is, you know, pretty forgettable and you're just not really going to get a whole lot out of guys like Jordy Mercer and probably Grayson Greiner, you know, Josh Harrison's not a bad hitter, and I expect you'll see him come around. I don't love him as the leadoff guy. I kind of prefer to see Candelario there because Candelario draws more walks, gets on base a little better, and can also provide you some, you know, some kind of front end of the lineup power, which I like to have. But for now, you know, it seems like Gardenhire is pretty set on using Harrison there for the most part, and, you know, that's going to be all right. We'll just kind of have to see how it goes. Hopefully he'll be flexible if Harrison isn't really getting it done. You know, it's too early to really get too deep into the numbers, and I'm just not going to bother. But I did read one really interesting article today that made the point that there aren't very many guys in the league who produce exit velocities of 100 miles per hour or better on balls in play and aren't at least, you know, solid major league hitters. That was basically the gist of the piece. And in that piece, they pointed out the fact that Nico Goodrum, Jamer Candelario, and Kristen Stewart have all already, you know, surpassed that with at least one ball. I think Nico's got three that are over 100 miles per hour already. And that's a good sign because all three of those guys also have some patience at the plate. In general, like, Nico has just looked awesome. You know, finding him a place to play, you know, probably isn't that big of an issue because they've got the DH spot open and you can move him around. But I would really like to see Nico Goodrum get a shot in the outfield a little more. I don't know if he can handle center field. He's looked a little rocky with some of the routes so far, and obviously he misplayed one ball to the wall on opening day. But he has the speed to play out there. You know, he's, you know, maybe a hair slower than Jacoby Jones. I'm not sure, though. Like, if those two guys were in a race, they both got the speed to play the position. It's just that Jacoby Jones just seems to have, you know, just superb instincts for going out and catching the ball all over the, you know, the outfield. You know, running to the wall, going in either direction, going back, coming in on balls. There's a lot to get comfortable with there, and, you know, Nico Goodrum has hardly played that position. I think he's only started out there, you know, four or five times in his whole career. But I wouldn't mind giving him a shot at it. Jacoby Jones began his rehab assignment with the Lakeland Flying Tigers earlier tonight, this Friday night when I'm recording. And, you know, so he's probably not too far away. If he gets into a little bit of a groove and is looking good, he's probably going to join the club maybe as early as this weekend. You know, you might even see him Sunday. If not, it probably won't be too long after that. Drew Verhagen, by the way, is also starting a rehab assignment down in Lakeland. So those two guys are down there and both look to be on pace to rejoin the big club. And at that point, you know, we assume Jacoby Jones will play center field just about every day. But I would like to see Nico Goodrum in the corners and use Kristen Stewart and Nick Castellanos a little bit at DH. You know, you need to see Kristen Stewart in left field. You need to see what he can do. But there's nothing wrong with, you know, with giving those guys each, you know, a day off per week to, you know, just kind of ride the pine, you know, just take the DH slot and just work on their hitting, get whatever's going on in the field out of their heads, and give Nico Goodrum, you know, the opportunity to show that, you know, maybe when Nick Castellanos is gone, if Nick Castellanos is gone, that, you know, maybe he can step in and play right field for you. You know, if he's a guy who can draw walks the way it looks like he can, you know, maybe hit you 15 to 20 home runs, steal 15 to 20 bases and play, you know, acceptable defense out there. That's a pretty useful player to have. Maybe even more useful than, you know, kind of the super utility role that they've got him designated for. Because you would hope, you know, in the future that the Tigers would have a, you know, fairly rock solid middle of the infield. That's really the weakness in the farm system, and really that's the thing that's, you know, keeping them from pushing in, I would assume, to start building back toward being a contender, because, you know, the pitching is coming. The pitching on the field has actually been pretty good. The Tigers do have plenty of guys in the farm system who, you know, have the stuff to be good relievers and the Tigers could start converting some of their starters. It looks like they've already moved Anthony Castro into a relief role at Erie. I like that move. Gregory Soto, when he returns from his suspension, might end up in that role as well. It's about time that he did. He's 24 and just hasn't shown the command or even really the control to be a starting pitcher and to go out there and pitch multiple innings. So there are some guys coming like that, and the, you know, and what they've had in the bullpen so far has done a nice job. And you've also got, you know, Zach Houston, John Schreiber, maybe Jose Cisnero, who really impressed in spring camp. You know, there's some arms. And, you know, it's kind of typical of a team that isn't very good to have a super irritating bullpen that frustrates opposing fan bases who are trying to win games and think of themselves as contenders. So, you know, why not the Tigers? It's time for us to kind of play that spoiler role this year. And so far, Ryan Gardenhire and his staff have the Tigers playing pretty scrappy baseball. And they've certainly had some luck pulling some games out, you know, with key hits and really low-scoring games when they didn't do much. But there was also, you know, I think it was the first game of the Yankee series where, you know, they had two men on and Nico Goodrum just ripped what looked like a double to right field, and Aaron Judge made a really, really nice diving catch to rob him there. Or, you know, they might have swept that series. That might have started something. And Nico Goodrum's numbers would even, you know, look better than they did. Just as an aside, like, how can you not love Aaron Judge? Like, you know, just seems like such a good dude. And then, you know, as big as he is, he's still, you know, quite an athlete. It's kind of baffling to watch this dude who's 6'7" and, I don't know, like 250, 260 pounds, like, you know, take these huge strides across the outfield and make a diving catch. The man is a freak, and he's good for baseball and fun to watch. And the only bad part about Aaron Judge is the team he plays for, but you got to respect the guy. So overall, you know, don't worry too much about the offense. You know, one other note, you know, is that to me, Nick Castellanos looks to be moving better in right field and reading the ball off the bat a little better than he did, especially early last year. You know, we're all pretty well accustomed to the idea that Nick Castellanos is a terrible defender. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I think you're going to see him, you know, be, you know, solidly just a below average right fielder. And last year, Nick Castellanos produced a 3-WAR season, you know, basically as the worst or one of the worst defenders in all of baseball. And that value really, really dragged down, his overall value. You know, if he can go out there this year and, you know, and kind of cut that negative defensive value in half, and I'm pretty confident that he can. You know, you're looking at a guy who might be a 4, maybe even a 5-WAR player if he can send a few balls out of the park. You know, there's just no reason not to trust the bat. You know, the last 3 seasons, Nick's been a really reliable, you know, hitter, above average hitter, not yet a great hitter, and maybe that point won't quite come. But it's been interesting seeing him taking more pitches and looking a bit more willing to draw a walk this year. You know, last year, Nick Castellanos was on an island, especially once Miguel Cabrera was down. You know, there just wasn't much else in that lineup that anybody knew about or was particularly worried about on the opposition side. And pitchers didn't have to pitch to him. You know, he was the one guy in that lineup where you could just kind of be careful with. And if, you know, having a little bit more depth around him with Candelario and Goodrum and Kristen Stewart and having Miguel Cabrera back allows him to kind of be a little bit more selective, you know, you're going to see his on-base percentage go up, and the power numbers will be probably better as well, or at least as good. And in the end, I think we're going to rue not offering Nick Castellanos a solid extension offer before the season started. You know, he's probably, you know, still not going to be like a huge, you know, piece as far as trade bait goes, just because of the way teams seem to be valuing good hitting outfielders who don't play good defense. You know, we saw this in the JD Martinez situation. You know, we've seen it with a couple other teams and players, guys struggling to find work. So I just don't know if it's going to be worth it to trade him rather than having just extended him before the season. But it also doesn't mean that he's necessarily gone. Obviously, the Tigers could end up just bringing him back in free agency if this all kind of goes this way. And you never know. Maybe he'll just butcher it up out there in right field and you guys can all just kind of come back at me and be like, hey, what were you thinking, believing in Nick Castellanos as a defender? Let me just make clear, I don't believe in him as a defender. I just don't believe he's nearly as bad as we saw last year. I think if you looked at split defensive numbers, you would see that Nick Castellanos, you know, accumulated a lot of that really bad defensive value in the first part of last season,
and played more acceptably as the season went on, and probably will do reasonably okay this year. So that's about as far as I'll go. But that's really all that needs to happen for Nick Castellanos to kind of start creeping up on the edge of, you know, being a potential All-Star candidate. He's not going to get the pub on this team. People aren't going to be paying a whole lot of attention to him. But when trading season comes around in July, especially, he's going to be a name that's on a lot of people's lips for teams that are looking for a bat. So we'll just have to see how it plays out. But so far, returns have been a little bit better in my estimation. And we'll just see if that holds up. So the series will get back underway tomorrow on Saturday, and the pitching matchup will be Matt Moore taking on Jorge Lopez of the Royals. Lopez I don't really know too much about. The Tigers have only faced him once last September, I believe, and just absolutely lit into him for one inning and scored 6 or 7 runs off of him. That's really my only memory of Jorge Lopez, so hopefully things go similarly tomorrow. Matt Moore, you know, it'll just be interesting to see if he can recreate what he did in his first start, because his velocity looked better than it had been in a couple years. He was sitting 94, 95 and kind of pounding the top of the zone, mixing in the cutter, curveball, and the changeup. And I don't have a ton of faith in Matt Moore going forward, at least as a starter. But if he's throwing that hard again, you know, he's a guy who could do a pretty good Justin Wilson kind of impersonation as a reliever. And that could have a lot of value to a team, too. And the fact that he's pitched as a starter and as a reliever already in his career, you know, he might be an interesting guy for a contending team to pick up to kind of use in both those roles and maybe hold over as a, you know, fairly hard-throwing lefty reliever to take into the postseason. So there's at least that potential, and we'll see how things shake out tomorrow. And that's going to kind of wrap it up for the Tiger talk here. I'm going to take a short break and we'll come back, and I'm just going to kind of hit on what I saw from the Erie Seawolves on Friday night in their home opener, well, their opening game of the season. They had Matt Manning on the mound, and I will bring you my impressions of Matt Manning's start and some of what the wrecking crew that was the Seawolves offense tonight did at the plate. So we'll be right back. Okay, and then to wrap things up for tonight, let's just do a little segment on what I saw watching the Erie Seawolves on Friday night in their home opener against the Yankees AA affiliate, the Trenton Thunder. Matt Manning got the start in this one and didn't particularly look that good. It was a cold night in Erie. He didn't really have a feel for the curveball. Had a couple of those kind of fly out of his hand. There were a couple that looked like the nasty plus breaking ball that we saw most of last season. But didn't really have it. Did throw a couple really nice changeups I saw in there as well. But basically, you know, just kind of cruised. You know, he was just kind of blowing fastballs by people the whole game. Didn't really have to lean back for too much either. You know, it looked like it was 93, 95, although we didn't have a gun. And the announcers weren't doing much to announce velocity readings. But, you know, Matt went 5 innings. Allowed just 1 run, 1 hit. I can't remember who it was, but someone pulled one down into the right field corner. A lefty kind of hit a pitch at the bottom of the zone and in. That was really the only hard hit ball the entire game. He wasn't real efficient necessarily, but it wasn't it wasn't even that bad. You know, 68 pitches, 44 strikes. He just basically kind of lost his arm slot a couple times. He walked 3 in the game, struck out 5, but again, only allowed the 1 hit. You know, and really just was throwing easy gas. And that, you know, we saw that a lot last year that, you know, he looks like he could reach back for more if he wanted to. And, you know, is pretty content to just throw 93, 95 and try to locate well. And with the extension he gets, like, you know, just no one was getting good swings off that fastball. He was just pumping the same pitch, like, past people. You know, at times spotting it really well, at other times just kind of, you know, control over command and just kind of throwing it in the strike zone. And yeah, you know, had a few moments where he got a little bit wild and was visibly frustrated with himself, which from my perspective is pretty cool to see. I've talked to Matt and interviewed him a couple times, and he is a very, very cool, collected, mature customer. Even when I first talked to him, when I think he was only 19, that was the impression I've got. You know, he's just very, like, very composed, professional person. And you don't necessarily see that much, like, you know, emotion or fire out of him, but he missed with a couple pitches in a row on 2 different occasions and was visibly pissed off with himself, which was kind of fun to see. It's just nice to kind of, you know, see the humanity there, because Matt really does just look like this, you know, just this methodical, like, hard-throwing kind of, you know, pitching bot out there on the mound. So it's just fun to see a little bit of emotion out of him. One thing I noticed, you know, his delivery doesn't really look particularly changed. You know, we've kind of talked and on the site, and also we've also heard, you know, Ron Gardenhire and the Tigers pitching coach Rick Anderson both kind of mention just, you know, the stride length that Matt Manning gets, and the fact that, you know, it leaves him on a really bent left leg as he goes into release, and probably limits his hip rotation a little bit. He kind of ends up just like sliding his whole torso kind of forward over the lead leg, and, you know, still gets great extension. You know, is still able to snap off the breaking ball and locate pretty well, but there's sort of a lack of fluidity at the end, and a lack of sort of snap at the end of his delivery there, that, you know, may require some addressing at some point. It might be better for him to shorten that stride just a little bit. And that was the suggestion that Gardenhire and Anderson had made, but it didn't really look like he'd made any particular adjustments. And, you know, maybe he won't until he needs to. And one of the things that was notable is that, you know, the Trenton Thunder didn't really appear to have any particularly good prospects in the lineup. I didn't really see anybody who looked very, very, very hitterish to me. But especially against Matt, you know, his 93-95 probably looks like 97 to those guys, and he was just kind of blowing them away without much visible effort. So, and he also does look, one thing I guess that was a little bit different is that Manning does look like he's put on some muscle. We saw that last year, like, you know, the beanpole that we saw kind of in 2017. Last year, he'd kind of filled out a little bit. He looks a little bit more filled out this year. You know, his legs look bigger, a little bit broader across the back. And, you know, we keep kind of joking behind the scenes about him filling out to end up looking like Noah Syndergaard and then forcing him to grow his hair out. And he's still on pace to end up, you know, that size of a pitcher. So, but, you know, this is just his first outing. You know, we'd like to see the breaking ball come along. There are still some issues maybe with his mix of pitches, and how well they play together that will have to be resolved as he goes along. But, you know, generally looked as dominant as you could ask, basically not needing much more than the fastball. And if he kind of, you know, goes out and is kind of cutting through everybody without much difficulty for a few months, you may end up seeing him in Toledo faster than you think, because he's got to be challenged a little bit more than that and pitch in a little bit more trouble. So we'll see. It's early. I assume he will have some struggles along the way, and we will see. The other notes from that game are that Derek Hill had a really nice night. I saw him, you know, drill a triple to the right center field wall. You know, it was a ball that would be a double for most players, but Derek Hill just burned it around the base pass. He had three hits in the game, drove in a pair of runs. And then Josh Lester had a home run in the game. Early on, and then kind of the real dagger was in the sixth inning. Isaac Paredes, who, you know, had two hits, four RBI in this game, just absolutely murdered a pitch to left field, and for his first home run of the season, and that was a two-run shot. And that was kind of the point where it was just sort of all over, and they went on to win by a score of 11-1. So that was a good debut. We had Casey Mize debut on Thursday for Lakeland. He took a no-hitter into the sixth inning, I believe. Only gave up one hit, struck out six. Talked a little bit to James Chipman, who's a scout who writes for and scouts for 24/7 Sports over at Tiggstown, and has, you know, written for Fangraphs and a bunch of other places. James Chipman is a, you know, a no BS kind of guy. He's seen a lot of baseball players over the years, and pretty much tells it like it is. And he wasn't exactly exuberant, but by his standards, he was pretty impressed with what he saw. It sounds like maybe Mize has kind of ditched that slurve. You know, he was working on that in the offseason and during spring camp, you know, kind of throwing a more downward breaking, you know, it's basically like a curveball the way he was throwing it, but with some horizontal action to it. Bit of 11-5 movement, and it seems like maybe he's gotten rid of that, or at least has put it in the back burner, because the slider was registering, you know, mid-80s again, which is kind of more like the slider that he had in college at Auburn, and that we expected kind of coming into the season. I like the idea of the slurve, and maybe it just hasn't worked out, or he doesn't feel comfortable with it yet. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. And that's, you know, that's kind of it for the notes. Trying to think if there was anything else of note. Tariq Skubal pitched for Lakeland tonight. I didn't really get a chance to look at his line yet. But we did get some video clips from Kenan Carter. I know Kenan's a big fan of Scooble, and had him interviewed him on the Minor League Tracker podcast maybe about a month ago. That's something you could look for if you kind of want to hear more from the young man. But he's got a really nice looking delivery, very clean action, throws hard for a lefty. You know, can touch 95, 96, pretty lively fastball and breaking ball. He's a really interesting pitching prospect to me that the Tigers picked up it might have been the fifth or sixth round, somewhere in there. But he's a guy who could turn out to be a steal. So it'll be fun to keep an eye on him as the season goes along. And we will certainly be doing so as our coverage of the minor leagues is, you know, kind of kicked off and will be a big part of what we're bringing you all spring and summer long. So for now, I think that's going to wrap things up. Ashley and I will be back with our usual episode this Wednesday. We'll talk a little bit about how the Kansas City series ended up and kind of preview from there what else has been going on. And that will about do it. I also have plans. Actually, I'm going to try to get Rob or Jackie on sometime next week, and maybe Keenan will have a Minor League Tracker podcast sometime next week. I'm not 100% sure kind of what his schedule is like, but we're going to try to talk a good bit about the minor leagues now that they're underway, and kind of break down the Tigers affiliates, look at some of the key guys to watch, and you know, that's going to be a bit of a fun part of being a Tigers fan this year. You know, watch the main team, but keep an eye on the prospects, because that's where the future lies, and you know, how those guys go is going to determine how fast you know, the Tigers can kind of get back to being a contender again, and hopefully how soon, you know, Chris Illich is encouraged to open the pocketbook and start adding a little bit more talent to sort of round things out. So that'll about do it for this week. Thanks for joining me, and we will talk to you all later. Good night.